we had a guest earlier on this morning who said, I don't like the word deregulation. Lisa, what did they say? It's sensible regulation.
Yeah, yeah. It's rational regulation. I love these words. So it's not deregulation.
These changes that a lot of people are looking forward to, and Lisa, they're expecting it to transform their business, that it will lead to better growth and ultimately better outcomes for the U.S. economy.
Well, and it's the deregulation, basically, and also the sense that people know what regulation they're following, that they're getting excited about. I think that the tax cuts also are something giving a tailwind. But how much of that's baked in? And that's, I think, what a lot of people are getting anxious about. It's all really great, but it's kind of in the price. And that's kind of what we're getting the sense of from investors.
We can have a deep dive on that conversation right now with the perfect guest, the Bridgewater Associates co-CIO, Karen Carney-Otunbo. Karen, it's good to see you.
Great to be here.
The tone here is phenomenal. Super upbeat. When we've spoken to American executives, they are fired up. Before we talk about 2025, I just want to reflect on 2024 with you. Double-digit returns for the firm. Can you walk us through which particular strategies were successful, where you found success in the market in the last 12 months?
Well, look, there's never one market that's the driver of success. We're obviously highly diversified, but I think it will really surprise you that our single best performer by far was in China, because the Chinese stock market was a disaster, right? China's going through a very painful deleveraging, not handling it particularly well. But the way we approached investing in China is that you don't want to rely on estimating that the policymakers will get it right. You sort of want to make a set of investments in China that can do well even if they stay in a pretty poor deleveraging. So the mix of holding kind of real assets in China, we buy commodities denominated in Chinese yuan so they can do well when the yuan depreciates. Holding the bonds in China actually helped us perform really well in China, even in a period of bad economics. So I'd call that out. And the second thing I'd call out is just currencies that I think were kind of boring, ignored for a long time, were a big winner for us.
Big move in the Chinese bond market. Chinese government bond yields have rolled over quite aggressively. Is this a position that you're keeping going into 2025, a theme that you want to keep playing?
We are. I mean, look, we're obviously looking carefully to say at what point can these bond yields not fall anymore, right? But everybody estimated this wrong when the United States, Europe, when we all went through our deleveragings. Everybody said, well, bond yields just can't go lower. There's no point in holding them anymore, and cut them way too soon. So I think that they're a nice diversifier to hold. They may not be a huge returner like 2024, but they're a pretty nice diversifier to hold. And the more Westerners step out of China, the more it's kind of like investing in Mars, right? Like every other market you hold, you have some of the same investors. So something happens, the same people pull in and out. Totally different investors are in China. They're marching by their own drumbeat. So we like the diversification.
I love that when everyone's leaning one way, you try to lean the other way. And that's been definitely the China bet. And you're sticking with it, this idea that China has more potential room to run than, say, some of the price-to-perfection markets in the United States. How much good news is baked in to the U.S. market?
I mean, look, I think it's a good but not amazing time to be taking risks in the markets. If you kind of look at our measure of, like, how risk-on, risk-off do you want to be? If you did not look at price, you would say it's a pretty great time, right? Because you'd say growth is rolling. There's a lot of momentum there. Inflation is at least low enough that it's not a major problem for most central banks at the moment. And there's a desire by the central banks to keep easing. If that's all you heard, you'd say, this is just a great time to be an investor. But then when you take into account what's already happened to risk premiums, how much is baked in, you've got to say, well, it can't be great. The hurdle for it to be great is just much higher. I mean, you look at the United States, and I'll give that as an example because it's obviously the most invested stock market in the world by a lot. Our number is something like you need, I don't know, 9.5%, 10% EPS growth to just kind of be on par with holding bonds. Now, that's not impossible. It could definitely happen. It just tells you that there's also room for disappointment, and you could have a pretty great year for the U.S. economy. You could have U.S. companies keep being really productive, keep returning money to shareholders, and it not be an amazing time to be an investor because it was already baked into the price.
So what's more price to perfection, stocks or U.S. government bonds?
Ooh, I mean, I'd say both are kind of priced for things working out well, but bonds may be priced even more to perfection because if you think about things really going poorly, you're going to actually get a big bond rally, right? But if you think about an inflation problem, there's not a big inflation problem that's baked in at this point. And if you think about what it takes to buy a government bond today, how much extra yield are you getting relative to cash? It's not that much. And so it wouldn't take that much of a dramatic turn to get a little bit more of a yield curve there, a little bit more of carry for you to hold these bonds.
What do you think's behind the recent backup we've seen in bond yields?
Well, look, you clearly have an administration that wants to use fiscal policy, that's not worried about running slightly bigger deficits. When you hear Trump's team, getting the tax cuts extended and hopefully larger is a very high priority. It's really, you know, top of their list. And you're starting with a bond market that already has priced in, you know, a very, very small carry. So I don't think it takes a lot. That said, there's been this kind of self-reinforcing nature of the bond market where every time the yield rises a little, that does its job to slow the economy a little, and then you get a little bit of a rally. So you've kind of been range-bound for a while. There's a lot of reasons for that to stay.
With those high yields, we've had a much stronger dollar. A key difficulty, I think, for a lot of investors into 25 is to how to manage that FX risk. What are you suggesting people should do? What's your best advice?
Well, look, I think one of the big things structurally that happened in the market is a lot of people kind of forgot about currency management as an important issue, because for many years, currencies didn't move as much as the underlying assets. So it didn't seem to matter. But in the last couple of years, I mean, you look at 2024, 2023, if you bought European stocks, Japanese stocks in America, it was dominated by the currency. That was a huge issue. So first of all, it's just even asking the question, saying what's neutral to me. And in my view, when you are taking foreign currency risk, that is uncompensated risk. So you should start out saying, I would be hedged unless I actually like that exposure. Now, I think the dollar probably has more room to run. You just have a stronger economy structurally. You have Trump policies that are very likely to be dollar bullish, right? You want to close the trade deficit. And so it's a good time for money to keep coming into the U.S. And if what you do is kind of close the trade deficit, but you don't tamper down anyone's desire to invest in the U.S. and the financial assets, you have to push the dollar up. My next favorite currency is probably the yen, but that means that pretty much almost any foreign investment you have, my view would be hedged back into the dollar today, because unless you have some view that you actually really like the euro or really like the UK pound, why are you holding this uncompensated risk? For people outside the United States, that actually means you can redenominate some of the assets into dollars even if they're not U.S. assets, and maybe you don't need to hedge as much. You actually have more hedging abroad.
At what point does the strength of the dollar become destabilizing and actually really undermine other assets? And I say this at a time where the U.S. is still borrowing a lot, it's still sucking a lot of cash in, and you have a strong dollar that makes countries with external debt that much more expensive to pay back. Does it become a significant problem?
I think the first people who are going to say this is a problem and be able to maybe not do something about it are actually the Trump folks. I think at some point they're going to say, wait a minute, I don't know if this is aligned with where we really want to go. Now, I don't know what tools they'll use. I think it's kind of an open question of how much they'll be willing to really use tools versus more just, you know, kind of in speech, hoping they talk the dollar down a little. But I think that they're likely to be the first people to say, wait a minute, has this gone too far?
Before we let you go back to the festivities and the discussions, one thing that I know you've been big on is gold, and this question of what's the inflation hedge that becomes most relevant at a time when it seems like we're in a new regime and inflation is going to be more prevalent, especially with a pro-growth policy. Are you still in that place?
Look, I like gold for two perspectives. I both like the inflation hedge, but I also kind of like the geopolitical hedge. If you look at who is buying gold, a lot of the gold buyers have really been those economies that feel most that the dollar is a political issue for them, and they don't have a lot of choices. Now, back on the dollar question, it's very hard to move the supply demand for dollars. So even if a lot of countries say, wait a minute, the dollar, that's politicized, there's so many buyers and sellers, but it's very easy to move the gold market. And so a very small number of buyers saying, wait a minute, I need a geopolitical hedge. What can I hold? They don't have that many options. Gold is one of the only options where you can say, there's nothing politicized here. I literally have a physical bar that can sit here. And then it piles on, right? And so central banks do it. Suddenly it goes up in your currency, and then suddenly you get retail investors and all sorts of emerging markets thinking, I need gold. And it just doesn't take a lot to move such a small market because there's a limited amount of it in the world. So I like the geopolitical hedge along with the inflation hedge. And I think that in general, there's just not a ton of great inflation hedges around. It's a really good question for people to really ask in their portfolio, what do I believe is a real inflation hedge here? Which companies could really withstand inflation? What do I have here? These are tough questions, ones that I think are really worth grappling with.
It's a really important point, and we've certainly seen the central bank buying the gold over the last year.
Oh, yeah, ramping up to record levels, and they've just announced that they're planning to do more of it, and that's got a lead time as well. So to that point, it's one of the reasons why people are leaning in to the gold bars that you can buy at what, Walmart?
Costco.
Is that what you did?
And other great retailers. Karen, it's good to see you. Thank you. Karen Tiani on Tambor there. Bridgewater Associates Co. CIO.